Epilogue. On the beach. The mind's eye has a fast-forward button. It's funny. Most of the time, we don't think about it in those terms. But when you're trying to write down a sequence of experiences, to take a series of unfortunate events and turn them into a coherent story, the mind's eye takes on some of the characteristics of an old-fashioned videotape recorder. Bulky, prone to dropouts and loss, cumbersome and wonky and breakable. So call me a camera and stick a battery in my ear. First, Punin got away. Here's what I imagine happened around the time I was screaming my lungs out on a bed of nightmares. In the back of a shiny black BMW speeding towards Woking, and thence to the motorway south to Dover and the Channel Tunnel, an old man opens his eyes and takes a deep breath.
"That was altogether too close for comfort," he says aloud.
Dmitri glances at him in the rearview mirror.
"With respect, sir, I agree."
His knuckles are white where they grasp the steering wheel, and he is racking up fines from the average speed cameras at an almost surreal rate.
"The men?"
Punin closes his eyes again.
"Dead. Or they'll exfiltrate. Vasily and the embassy can see to their knees. I am going home to explain this fiasco."
He is silent for nearly a minute.
"We nearly had it all. A transcript of the Stenberg fragment, Fuller's memorandum on binding the Eater of Souls." "With respect, sir, cultists are always unreliable proxies, and we did get the schemata for the violin, and we weakened the British."
Punin glares at Dmitri.
"Weakening the British is not the goal of the great game. Survival is the goal. We are intelligent men, not panicking rats biting each other as they struggle to escape the sinking ship. They are the enemies of our enemy. Never forget that. It is the cultists' error to imagine themselves beset by foes they can never defeat."
"Like back there?"
asks Dmitri. Punin doesn't answer. They drive the rest of the way to the channel in silence. Second, here's what I know happened. Once I woke up briefly, in a darkened nighttime room, with two beds and a door and a man in a blue suit standing outside the door with a gun. The man in the bed next to me was familiar. He was asleep, and I remember thinking that there was something very urgent that I had to tell him, but I couldn't remember what it was, and the file was missing. Then the alarm went off, and the medics came, and they made me go back to sleep. I don't remember much after that, which is a mercy. The dreams were bad. Mo tells me that for the first week they kept me heavily sedated. If they eased up on the chlorpromazine, I started screaming and trying to eat my own fingers. She visited every day. She sat by my bedside and fed me, spooning mush into my mouth and making sure I didn't choke on it. Angleton recovered much faster. 2 nights under observation, and they released him. Then he heard about me and kicked up a stink. They were planning on moving me to St. Hilda's. Angleton had a better idea of what was wrong with me and refused to take no for an answer. So, after nearly a week in hospital, with my head wrapped in the pink fluffy haze of a major antipsychotic bender, a private ambulance picked me up and deposited me in the village. The village used to be called Dunwich, back before the Ministry of War evacuated it and turned it into a special site. It was allocated to the wartime Special Operations Executive, part of which later became the laundry, and inherited this small coastal community with its street of cottages and decaying pier, its general store and village pub. Today we use it as a training centre, and also as a quiet place for taking time out. There's no internet access, and no mobile phone coverage, and no nagging from head office about timesheets and sickness self-certification. There is a medical doctor, but Janet is sensible and very patient, and has seen an astonishing number of cases of Kranzberg syndrome and other more esoteric sorcerous injuries over the years. They billeted me in a tiny seaside cottage, and Janet took me off the chlorpromazine, substituting a number of other medications, not all of them legally prescribable. MDMA helps a lot when you're suffering from the delusion that you're one of the walking dead. After 3 days, I stopped shivering and hiccuping with fear. After a week, I could sleep again without a nightlight. At the weekend, Mo came to visit. I was glad to see her. She knows what it's like where I've been, to a good first approximation. We spent a lot of time together, just holding hands. It feels very strange, touching someone who's alive. Maybe in another week I'll be able to hug her without recoiling because I'm terrified I'm going to accidentally eat her mind. That's the trouble with this job. Sometimes it chews you up and spits you out. Literally. Mo came back the next weekend, too. She says she's trying to get her week's compassionate leave, but the fallout from Iris's actions has been beyond earth-shaking. We'll see. I've been working on this report for a couple of weeks now. This being the village and an internet-free zone, I'm allowed to use a computer and...